Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
Won't you subscribe at youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit the bell for notifications. Also get your Studios America merch at StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code STU10 for 10% off your entire order. Daniel Horowitz is here to break down the world's latest reactions to the Trump tariffs. I've got some new gold from Jasmine Crockett. Everything she says is gold, but this is new. Be sure to put on your idiot protected visors, because we should really have those for merch. Jasmine Crockett idiot protection visors. Just say, I'm throwing it out there. New product alert. Let's look into it. We're going to start, though, by doing John Oliver, biology denier. Yes, John Oliver. He's on HBO. If you don't know who he is, he's got an English accent. It's probably the only thing you might know about him. Wears some glasses. And he wants ladies to shut up. And he wants to let the dudes win. Yes, that's the headline from Outkick about this particular monologue that went somewhat viral. And I want to come back to John Oliver and why you should appreciate John Oliver. You're going to think to yourself, "Gosh, I want to hear some liberal just give annoying British jokes for a half an hour every week." You should appreciate him, like you appreciate Jasmine Crockett. It's the same type of appreciation. But John Oliver is particularly special. We'll get to that here in a second. This is the video, by the way. It went viral, millions of views. Everything John Oliver posts gets millions of views. I do wonder if the YouTube algorithm helps him, because he posts things like lead. It's just a monologue about lead. And it gets like 9 million views in 20 minutes. Maybe you could have a monologue on lead that is just that great and that everyone loves it so much. But that would take some time for people to notice that it was a great monologue about lead and then share it, and the algorithm sees all that. It just immediately gets millions of views the second he posts it. A lot of times more views than he has followers. So that's kind of weird, but whatever. Let me give you a little taste of this, because this one was about women competing in sports against dudes that are saying that they're women. Now, this is the type of thing that almost everybody, even most people on the left, think is completely nuts, okay? Taking away medals, ribbons, triumphant achievements from girls and women to give them to dudes who are having an identity crisis is something that obviously all conservatives dislike, almost everybody in the middle dislikes, and a good chunk, more than half, of Democrats actually object to as well. But this is why John Oliver is so special. He's going to bring you through why it's the only obvious choice to think it's a totally normal and natural thing.
Listen to this. A shocking report from the United Nations states over 600 female athletes have lost close to 900 medals to transgender opponents.
Female athletes have lost nearly 900 medals to transgender athletes.
You had the United Nations study come out not long ago about 900 medals for females that ended up going to transgender athletes.
Yeah, 900 medals. That is a go-to statistic. It was even cited on the floor of the Senate during their debate over a trans sports ban and featured prominently in J.K. Rowling's latest tome. But we got curious about that number, so we looked at that report, and it turns out, first, it wasn't produced by the UN. It was submitted to it by a special rapporteur who herself said its findings do not necessarily represent those of the UN. And if you go online to the footnote that it cites and click on it, you get sent to this website, She Won, where anyone could submit an instance of a cis woman losing to a trans woman anywhere in the world in any competition, big or small.
Now, remember that, because that's how he presented it to his audience, who laughed at that joke that said the latest J.K. Rowling tome. That was the whole joke you were supposed to laugh at that time. Or at least you were supposed to laugh when the signs in the studio went off and said laughter. He also went on to criticize the organization She Won.
The way they got to that 900 number has to do with how they counted the wins. Because on the list, one trans woman finishing first counts as three denied medals. The logic being, the second place finisher should have come first, the third place finisher should have come second, and the fourth place finisher should have come third. And look, some will argue it doesn't matter how minor the competition. The women on that list were all unfairly deprived of their rightful place.
Some
but
do worry
even
that,
some
yeah.
of those women don't feel that
oh,
way.
Oh, some of them?
This one, a disc golfer, has publicly stated she's happy to see trans people in disc golf. And an amateur cyclist named Kristen Chalmers is actually on the list twice because for some reason a single race she lost is on there under two different spellings of her name. She came in third behind two trans women, but she has made it clear they are her friends and she has no problem competing with them.
Look, it's two people. Now, of course, it's really funny for HBO. And by the way, John Oliver, if you've ever seen his writing staff, you will see it during the, what is it? The what's the lower rated TV awards show? Emmys. In the Emmys, he'll go up there with 947 writers. Now, he just made multiple mistakes. We're about to go through all of them, and there were so many more in the monologue, with that gigantic staff. The She Won website is a small website with a small staff trying to actually sign some attention on this. Did they make a mistake in a spelling error? Maybe. I don't know, but I know it's hilarious to laugh at them. Let's go through their response, though. They did respond to some of his specific claims. Shockingly, they were not accurate. First, John Oliver leads viewers to believe that the content on SheWon.org is directly published by random people on the internet. This is totally false. We encourage people to submit tips, and our team of volunteers reviews each entry before we publish anything. So think about that for a second. That was his big lead. Anyone can submit anything where anything happened. Well, yeah, they can submit it, but it doesn't go on the site unless they actually check into it and find out that it's accurate. So there's that. We only publish what we can verify from primary and secondary sources. We state this methodology clearly on our website, so check one off for deliberately misleading viewers. Second, John Oliver also suggests that our data is stale, mentioning that it dates back to the year 2001. This is extraordinarily misleading. 97% of our data is dated no earlier than 2014, and 86% is from 2019 onward. Check another off. Third, John Oliver attacks our organization to discredit the idea that a significant number of women are displaced by male athletes in women's competitions. This is absurd because She Won does not purport to provide a comprehensive list of every woman denied a medal to male athletes. This is one of the, you know, the typical go-to arguments of people saying that that conservatives or sane people are wrong when it comes to this issue. Come on. Barely ever happens, and come on, if it does happen, it's really good and wonderful. See, people enjoy it. The disc golfer said so. It's fascinating to kind of look at that and say, well, hold on just a second here. Which one is the more important one? Is it that it's not, I mean, because if it's good, why do we care that it's not a lot of people? Why would that be anything at all to people if it's a good thing? And if it's a bad thing, I mean, yeah, sure, it would be worse if there was happening to more people, something they will never admit. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't know, you usually probably have one, maybe two daughters. If it's happening to them, it kind of makes a big difference in your life, doesn't it? It might not be as big of an issue as some nationwide, you know, pandemic, but it's a pretty big issue, especially when it hits your family. She Won continues. On the contrary, She Won is a tiny organization run by volunteers. The database we compile is almost certainly the tip of the iceberg. We frequently exclude submissions, many coming directly from individual athletes, because there aren't enough sources to verify against. In fact, She Won came into existence as a response to the disturbing lack of data on this topic and as a response to the disingenuous refrain, "This isn't happening." The sad truth is that no other media outlet has seriously investigated the scope of this problem, and sporting organizations are more often than not hostile to providing any data about males and female competition. Of course they're not. They don't want to get harassed by the media. They don't want John Oliver doing a monologue about them. So they're not going to give you data on that. They're not going to help. They're going to try to stay out of it, understandably. But you need brave organizations like this to actually do some of the work. John Oliver now attempts to undermine one of the few organizations documenting this problem and suggests that if our data is flawed, the problem simply doesn't exist. Fourth, Oliver quibbles with our tally. He discussed this earlier with one male winner displacing a second, third, and fourth place woman, which counts as three medals lost. We see no issue with this methodology. Three medals were lost. Our focus is the women who are affected by unfair male competition. Not on the male athletes displacing them. Every single woman from gold to bronze suffered an injustice. We discount none of them. The unfortunate truth is that we're severely undercounting the number of affected women. Outside of the podium, women are denied placement on a team, like would-be Olympian Tanya Edwards, or denied placement in a finals event, like NCAA swimmer Reka Georgie. So there you go. That's some of the tweets that they came back on, because this monologue was very long. If you don't know John Oliver's monologues, it can be 20 or 30 minutes at a time. And he went through a lot of this, and the focus of it wasn't necessarily this one organization, who I think deserves a rightful hearing. But secondarily, it was just basically to say this wasn't really a thing. In fact, it went into and tried to purport the scientific discoveries, which are fascinating to anyone who's, you know, lived. Anyone who's ever observed humanity in any way. Men and women are different. Boys and girls are different. And sure, you can go through and find certain, like, you know, could Gina Carano kick my ass? Of course she could. That doesn't mean that men and women are equal and we should have them box each other all the time. When you take people of equal age and, you know, abilities, in other words, the same ability as the top of the female ranks and the top of the male ranks, what you find is males are better when it comes to athletic ability. This isn't a knock on women. It's just the obvious thing that all people know, or at least knew until 2 weeks ago. And now John Oliver is out there convincing all these liberal followers that actually, when you look at it, the smart position is there's no difference between men and women. In fact, they're pretty much exactly the same. This has been totally overblown. I mean, there's a million ways you could go about this. Everybody, I don't even need to make this argument. So let me make it as simply as possible. I'll give you these world records, women's world records compared to men's in track and field. Track and field, I would say the most pure example of the obvious physical and athletic ability of somebody. Yeah, you know, because you could be a great basketball player and not be the best athlete. It's hard. It's really hard. But, you know, when you're talking about track and field, you're just either running as fast as you can, jumping as far as you can, right? These are very basic measures of athletic ability. And here's the results. The 100-meter dash, the women's record is 10.49 seconds. That's freaking really fast. You can do that. You're incredible. But, of course, the men's is 9.58, an 8.67% difference. 200-meter is a 10% difference. 400-meter is a 10% difference. 800-meter is an 11% difference. 1,500-meter and a 10% difference. 5,000-meter, an 11% difference. 10,000-meter, a 10% difference. A marathon, 9.26. Again, it's from 2:14 to 2:01, a 13-minute difference. That's pretty significant. 4x100 relay is a 10% difference. 4x400 is an 11% difference. And then the jumping, when you're getting into not just running and you get into jumping, it's much more significant. Long jump, a 16% difference. Triple jump, 14% difference. High jump, 15% difference. Pole vault, 19% difference. This doesn't mean that those athletes that have the women's record are anything to shrug at. They're incredible, incredible athletes. In fact, as you go through the ages, you see when you're very, very young, women are much, much more competitive. And when I say women, I mean girls are very much more competitive with boys. As it gets older, it gets harder and harder to do that. I've told the story before of a really, really good select baseball team that my son's team was in a tournament with. And, you know, he was playing his game, and that game ended, and we walked over to watch the game next to us. There's one of these top teams in Texas, and they are going up against another really, really good team. And the pitcher is a girl. And she's, I guess at that time it was 12-year-old girl, throwing over 70 miles an hour. Like, that can happen. It's really, really impressive. She was really good. I think she gave up one run in the game and later on hit a home run in the same game. That's really hard, also really rare. That's not to say that one woman can't compete against even high-level men. It does, of course, occur. I mean, you look at those 100-meter times. What is it, 10.49? 10.49 is a world record that can compete with everybody on every level of men up until that Olympic level. Like, it's an incredible achievement. But at equal levels, there's always a gap. And every single person on Earth knows this. Yet we are supposed to deny it. And it's supposed to be the smart thing. Now, J.K. Rowling also responded to this. He goes, I understand why men like Oliver, who've consistently mocked anti-science people on the right, sold out initially, they didn't want to blow up their careers. Taking fashionable anti-women's rights positions was the cost of doing business. But it's time to read the effing room. Now, I will say, that's one of my least favorite phrases. The two favorite phrases that I hate the most are read the room and be on the right side of history. Because that kind of says that you should be thinking about something other than what you believe is the truth, right? Read the room. Other people think that this is true. You should also think this is true. I don't think you should ever do that. I'm not saying she's suggesting that, but that it's implied in that phrase. The other one is be on the right side of history, saying that like, oh, well, how people will judge you in the future is the right way. Think about that when you come up with your opinion. I don't think you should do that. I think you should try to figure out what the truth is. But the truth is really obvious. The truth that men and women are different is really freaking obvious. Every single person on earth, including John Oliver, know this. Yet they go on television and they say the opposite anyway. This is part of the reason why, you know, we had the finals for the NCAA over the past couple days in men's basketball and women's basketball. And like, this is why men's basketball for a long time has always been more popular, because people want the highest level sport. That's not to say that women are not playing. They are playing at the highest level of women's sports. But, you know, up until very recently, with one specific exception to the rule being Caitlin Clark, people just aren't typically as enthralled with women's sports in particular areas, like when it comes to something that's, you know, as raw athleticism as basketball. And, you know, by the way, we were told over and over again that it wasn't just Caitlin Clark. It was women's basketball generally. It's having a moment. It might just be Angel Reese. Yeah, we saw what happened when Angel Reese dropped out, and also when Caitlin Clark was out of the playoffs, what happened to the ratings of the WNBA, and now we're also seeing what is happening in the NCAA Women's Championships. When Caitlin Clark was there, 18.9 million viewers, an all-time record. She's not there this year, 8.5 million, so lost more than half of the viewers. And of course, this is also queued up as a racist thing, not just a sexist thing, but a racist thing that people just only cared about Caitlin Clark because she was white. As Dave Portnoy points out, I'm going to need all the race baiters who explain Caitlin Clark's popularity simply because she's white to explain why 10 million more people watched her last year than Paige Buckers. Also white this year. I'll hang up and listen. Again, I don't care about women's basketball, so I apologize to Paige, who is from the state that I grew up in, and everyone is obsessed with UConn in that state, but still, sorry, I don't follow it all that closely. Look, as you grow up and you have children, we had girls that were on, you know, teams that my son played on. I had boys that were on the teams my daughters played on when they were really young, and generally speaking, they can compete pretty evenly. And as they get older and as they grow, that goes away. It goes away not because women are bad, not because they're unequal as human beings or citizens, but because they're different. Testosterone makes a difference when it comes to sports. It's not the most important thing, but it is a thing. And it is important when it comes to your daughter getting hit in the face with a volleyball at 80 miles an hour. It's just not cool. I mean, we constantly criticize the states around this, and at some level we kind of, at the very least, look side-eyed at the male athletes that are doing this, you know, the Leah Thomases of the world, and say, come on, what are you doing, dude? You, this is unfair. You're just beating up on women that you should not be matched up against. We should also look at the parents, especially at those younger ages, who are allowing their sons to do this. They hold a real high level of the responsibility. And look, good God, I can't imagine going through and raising a child, and then they just tell you one day they're a totally different gender and you're supposed to go along with it. I'm sure it's really difficult to deal with. I'm not saying it's not. But, you know, at some level, you do have a responsibility to try to stop this, at least while they're in your household. You can't stop it when they're Leah Thomas and they're college and they're stealing medals from college students. But you can probably help it a little bit earlier in life. You know, co-ed leagues are a thing. You know, if you've ever played, you play a beer softball league or a church softball league. If you're playing outfield, what do you do when the girl comes up in the lineup? Tell me what you do. You all know what you do. You take 5, 6, 7, 8 steps in. That's what you do. That's what you do. It's not that women are bad, but that's what you do. Now, look at the Oklahoma girls softball team. They can hit it over your head. Yeah, damn straight they can. You know, I'm a fat, overweight, almost 50-year-old man. Lots of people who are in shape of any size or gender could beat the crap out of me. And that goes for most people. But we're not talking about comparing the highest level athletes with a bunch of schlub fat guys who talk into cameras every day. That's not what happens. You compare people of equal ability at the top of their craft or in the middle of their craft, and everybody knows, because if you do a league with a bunch of fat, overweight talk show hosts, and you put a bunch of fat female overweight talk show hosts, the fat male talk show hosts are probably going to outdo them. That's just the way it works. There's this, you know, he makes this sort of a fake comparison. I don't know if you use Ronda Rousey or whatever. Can Ronda Rousey beat me up? Sure. Can Gina Carano beat me up? Sure. So? What is that? So what? What are you saying? You have to get a high-level professional athlete to come show how women can beat up men? Of course they can at some level. Yes. But you know what? The other part of this is, if they got in a fight, the guy should do his best to not punch anyway, right? I don't know. Call me a sexist, but don't have any desire to watch women punch each other in the face, and I sure don't have a desire to watch men punch women in the face. But this is another great example of this, maybe the most pure example we've done of this, of John Oliver being an incredible gift to conservatives. He has a unique ability. And John Stewart did this at some level too, but he was a little bit more sane. John Oliver has a unique ability to take the worst instincts of the Democratic Party. Hey, we should all be trans and DEI and CRT and ESG and embrace those things and tell people that they need to, vaccine mandates are sent directly from God, who you shouldn't believe in. And to kind of promote that as the only sensible, rational position for the Democrats to take. And they eat it up. And then they take elections and they put them on platters and they hand them to conservatives over and over and over and over again. Continue, if you are the left and you're watching this, continue to think you're superior. Continue to think that John Oliver is spoon feeding you the most wise decision and most wise position possible. Show the voters that's who you are. Because if they see that, they will throw you out of office and they'll never look back. That's kind of what happened in 2024. And it can kind of happen, you know, most of the Democrats ran away from these insane positions because of what happened in 2024. John Oliver is coming to you. He's here to argue that you should maintain those positions. And he's got a British accent, so you have to believe him. So please, left, think and consider John Oliver's intelligent opinions and make sure to follow them or whatever. When the economy gets weird, and let's be honest, right now it is, big decisions get even harder, and few are bigger than buying or selling a home. Prices shift, interest rates bounce, timing feels impossible. It really is stressful. But the one thing you can control is who's in your corner, and that's why I always tell people to go to realestateagentsitrust.com. Start there. These are the people, the top agents in your area, real professionals who know how to navigate a market where the economy's kind of a little upside down, people who've closed deals through ups and downs and who actually take the time to understand what you need, whether you're trying to find the right home for your family or maybe just the best price for the one that you're in. This is the kind of help that makes the difference between a good move and a financial mess. Start with someone you can trust. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com, realestateagentsitrust.com. The name says it all, and it's a free service to you, by the way, so take advantage of it. It's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I want to bring in Daniel Horowitz, Blaze News senior editor, host of Conservative Review podcast, and of course, author of the new piece, Trump State, Biden Agenda, Wyoming Gets Played by Green Grifters, which you can read right now over at theblaze.com. Daniel, how's it going?
Hey, we're doing all right. Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. I want to get into your piece here in a second about a new version of the green news scam, if you will. But let me start with kind of the big news of the week, which has been the tariffs over the past week or so. Give me your 50,000 foot view here, Daniel. I mean, what do you think of Trump's approach on tariffs?
You know, I think the best way to understand this is by zooming out and understanding why this isn't, nor should it be, the big issue. The bigger issue is the fiscal deficit, not the trade deficit. There's what to do in terms of leveraging certain countries' unfair practicing, beginning with China. There's what to say about things like pharmaceuticals and defense products being manufactured at home. But if we're going to kind of lead into demagoguery, to say every problem that we have is because of trade practices, it misses the point, and we can't simultaneously take Biden's biblical levels of inflationary debt, increase them, which sadly is what Trump is twisting arms today for conservatives to support the Senate bill, which is worse than the House bill, and then complain about a trade deficit. We have, you know, the biggest thing we export, the biggest thing we export is debt, the treasuries. I believe it's about $500 billion of foreign investment in our treasuries. Now, we're being told by some elements, now there is a difference in terms of focus between, I'd say, a Bessent versus a Peter Navarro. Yeah. But if you take the Peter Navarro approach, it's like imports bad, exports good. And again, obviously, it's a lot more complicated than that. Trade deficits aren't inherently good. They're not inherently bad. It depends why, where, what product, which country. But what I'm saying is we are crowding out the ability of countries to buy real things from us because we're selling nothing but our own debt to hang ourselves with. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit incongruent to support a Senate bill that will create another $5.8 trillion in deficits on top of the current baseline and then complain about a trade deficit. I would have done this more narrowed, assembled an alliance to isolate China, not isolate ourselves. I would have focused on pharmaceuticals. I would have focused on defense products. And I would have focused on easing off of foreign labor. You know, it's a little bit weird that we don't want, you know, we want to make sure sneakers are stitched now on American soil, but somehow elements of this administration think that we need more Indians and Chinese taking every single computer engineering and now medical job.
Yeah, it's an interesting focus. I mean, and of course, this has been, and we're going to talk about this more in tomorrow's show, but like a focus of the Democratic Party for a long time, these tariffs. Yep. You know, Peter Navarro, long-term Democrat, right? Like, and this has been an approach of the unions and such for a very long time. And I think, too, you know, Daniel, there's a couple of different ways you can go about attracting jobs to the United States. You yep. can try the tariffs approach here is what Trump is trying to do. But also you can also incentivize businesses, right? You can cut taxes. You can make regulation much more clear. You can try to entice companies to come rather than trying to punish them from staying over there. Shouldn't that be a bigger part of the focus?
Exactly. I mean, that's the point. Look, you know, just to deviate a little bit, you know, I was fighting illegal immigration for 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
Before it was cool. I think we need a legal immigration moratorium. But at the same time, I'm not going to look at you and say that's the source of every ill and the solution to every problem. Like, we're going to balance the budget by getting rid of illegal immigration. And I think we have to be careful that we don't take a certain observation or trend that maybe the pendulum has been a little bit too much towards these multilateral trade agreements, locking us in, ignoring certain practices, to then, you know, engaging in sophistry and demagoguery that this is exclusively the source of why Appalachia went downhill. And we just need to, you know, throw in a bunch of tariffs, and not just tariffs, but somehow make parity in a trade deficit between us and countries, you know, 20 times smaller and less prosperous, and that will solve it. It's the devaluation of our currency. It's the debt. It's the welfare. It's Dodd-Frank, Sarbanes-Oxley, Obamacare, healthcare is a dumpster fire. It's the green scam and New Deal. It's the misallocation of capital and resources. It's the labor unions that took a lot of this down, which there's elements of this progressive populism creeping up on the right that seems to be embracing that. It's education. It's multifactorial. So I understand the frustration that you have the courts screwing with a lot of what Trump wants to do. Nothing good is coming out of Congress, so he feels like he wants to leverage what he can. But again, if you know a lot of the regulatory stuff gets struck down, we don't pass repeal the Green New Deal and reconciliation, we continue spending ourselves into oblivion. I just don't think, even if you take on Peter Navarro's thesis, that that could single-handedly bring back every industry.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that, Daniel. Let me take a quick moment and move over to Wyoming, because here we go, Wyoming, bright red state. Well, maybe the brightest red state we have with a couple of competitors nearby, but pretty bright red state. A state that you'd think of, you think of open lands, you think of, you know, fossil fuels, you think of a lot of things that are associated with, you know, Trump's platform generally. And then you see that they're entertaining massive green energy projects. What's the story here?
This is a trend going on throughout the country. We control most lands. Most lands are in red states. And the Green New Deal could not have gotten off the ground without the acquiescence of Republican governors. Yet every single Republican governor to this day is implementing the Green New Deal, except for Ron DeSantis, others to varying degrees. Mark Gordon in Wyoming is a huge progressive Republican. He supports what he calls carbon negative. Now, what this trend is, they're now buying, they're selling state lands, mix of private lands, in places like Eastern Wyoming in this case, to European ESG consumers of Green New Deal subsidies to build these dystopian wind farms. Now, here's the thing. They suck up a lot of water. They suck up resources. They're economic parasites, and they don't produce. In this case, they're taking it to the next level. Not only – they're not even pretending – to say, oh, it's going to power your local counties and the communities there. It's designed to do nothing but be situated there as an offset for airline companies purchasing jet fuel, carbon credit trading. So they could feel good about themselves. We're going to colonize red America with ugly anti-environmental wind farms that are going to have to be retired after 25 years and need natural fossil fuels to make it not impotent and to do anything. And what's so tragic is that, you know, this is a state that should be leading on coal production in particular. And I'm glad to see that Trump has made an executive order, you know, promoting coal today. But, you know, Stu, this is what I'm talking about. Think about this dead weight misallocation of resources on our economy. This is why the myopic focus on trade is not going to work if we don't get rid of the Green New Deal. To be fair, Trump wants to get rid of it. But again, if he doesn't strong arm the rhinos in Congress and instead strong arms the Freedom Caucus that's trying to put repeal of the Green New Deal and reconciliation, and then you have every Republican governor promote it, you know, we are not going to bring back industry. This is what has destroyed West Virginia, and this is what's destroying many red states.
It's fascinating. Why would Republicans go along with it? Is it just, you know, is it just money? I mean, are they really just interested in these green causes? What is it?
You know, Mark Gordon is pretty progressive, and he might actually support this, but most of them, it's not so much ideological. And look, I know this is going to be a little controversial, but these people are such venture socialists that they will take any opportunity to take a federal grant to lose freedom, that you could have, God forbid, one day, the next Democrat president open up concentration camps for political opponents, and they'll clamor to open them up in their states because it creates jobs. I mean, this is their mentality. They just want to take that short, easy handout to create fake jobs. In this case, literally doing nothing but free money that's causing inflation. And again, if we don't stop this in red states, we're never going to end the Green New Deal.
It seems like there's been a big pushback against ESG. A lot of these companies have come out and said, hey, we're abandoning this policy. We're abandoning our DEI stuff. You know, It does seem like we've had a little bit of movement on that. Are these companies still going down this road and need to find all of these offsets?
I mean, look, it's profitable. At the end of the day, the government, remember, we had the wind production tax credit since the 90s. You had the solar investment credit since 2005. You have the ethanol biofuels grift. Now you have this carbon capture nonsense. I mean, there's a lot of money put up behind it. Also, a lot of states, I know West Virginia had this, and the governor there, they have a better governor who's trying to get rid of this. They make it that you don't have to pay property taxes. Remember, with land depreciation, you have to chew up a lot of land to do this. That's a huge tax incentive right there to produce wind as opposed to something that works better like coal or natural gas. So, I mean, this is venture socialism at its best. And again, I got to say this, Stu. I love Scott Bessent's macro messaging. We need to detox. We need to transition our economy from a public GDP to a private GDP. I love the messaging. I just think fundamentally trade policy ain't it. It's things like this. We need to abolish all corporate welfare like this that distorts the market, that it has destroyed Appalachia, destroyed rural jobs, destroyed rural energy. It's sucking up resources. Here's another thing, Stu, that's happening. This is happening in Oklahoma as well, that we're taking finite land and we're taking it out of production of food for what it's supposed to be used for, this odious, infectious form of energy. It just, no person would ever do this logically, and it would never get off the ground without government renewable portfolio mandates, monopolization of the public square to promote it, and obviously the fiscal incentives.
I'm so glad you're drawing attention to this. The piece is called Trump State, Biden Agenda, Wyoming Gets Played by Green Grifters, by Daniel Horowitz. Of course, he's the Blaze News senior editor and host of Conservative Review, the podcast. You should definitely subscribe to that. Head over and do that wherever you get your podcasts. So Daniel, I really appreciate it, man. Thanks for doing all this hard work.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
Supreme Court is allowing Alien Enemies Act deportations to resume. Now, this is interesting on a couple reasons. One is it wasn't like a sweeping victory for the Trump administration. It is a victory of some sorts. It basically slaps down the lower courts and says you can't just have these injunctions that stop everything all the time. You can't do that. They slapped them down on that. And they did, however, not give Trump his best version of this, which is what he wanted, which was basically to be able to do this whenever he wanted. He said, you have to have some due process. You have to have some reasonable time before you just start ejecting these people out of the country. So there's a little bit of back and forth there. So that's part of it. That's part one. It's mixed, although it's a victory for Trump. It's a little bit more mixed than it maybe is being reported overall. Secondarily, Amy Coney Barrett was with the liberals on this. You know, even John Roberts with the conservatives, but Amy Coney Barrett made it a 5-4 ruling and went with the left on this. And, you know, she's kind of getting a lot of criticism from the right. Couple things on her real quick. One is, to be honest with you, you know, Trump's had three Supreme Court justices. He hasn't nailed any of them. You know, there's no catastrophes in there. Amy Coney Barrett is not a catastrophe. There's no tens either. You know what I mean? I don't know. They all seem between like 5 and 8, 5 and 7. You know, there's no home runs there, no perfect picks, no Alitos, no Thomases, also no suitors. So, I mean, it's better than, you know, it's not as a terrible, as worse as it could be record, but really there's some misses here, I think, and some problems. Amy Coney Barrett, by the way, when it comes to standing and it comes to jurisdiction, she's like a stickler. And that's where you're seeing her kind of fall out of line of the conservative justices overall. This was sort of a jurisdiction type of ruling, but there you go. Okay, next up, we have seven GOP senators signing on to a bill to check Trump's trade authority. This is interesting because, like, I will tell you, if we had no idea, no one would ever know who voted for this. It wouldn't be seven GOP justices that would or judge senators that would vote for this. It would be probably 30, right? It would be definitely higher. These are just the senators who don't mind standing up to Trump and saying something. And a lot of them come from the sort of establishment moderate type of wing here. You're talking about people like Mitch McConnell, Chuck Grassley, Jerry Moran, Lisa Murkowski, Tom Tillis, Todd Young, and Susan Collins. The Trade Review Act of 2025, by the way, I think this is a pretty good bill, you know, at least as it's being reported right now. Basically, what it would do is if the president, any president, Trump or anyone else, decided they wanted to change tariffs, raise them on somebody, they, within 48 hours, would have to tell, give a justification to the Senate as to why they're doing it. And then those tariffs would expire after 60 days if Congress did not sign on to them. This is Congress's power. This is not a Republican thing. It's not a Susan Collins idea. This is like a founding father's idea. They gave the power to Congress in the Constitution directly. And the fact that the Congress has given up this power is not just a Republican problem or a Democrat problem. It is an insane Washington problem that should end. There should be a check from Congress. It's their job. It's not the president's job. Donald Trump is doing the work that Congress decided they didn't feel like doing, and that's a problem. AOC filing first class to Bernie Sanders fight oligarchy rally. Of course. Of course she is. She's very entertaining, and you might say, well, she's the most entertaining person in the House. She's insane. No, no, no. That's because you forgot about Jasmine Crockett, who's my new favorite. My new favorite in Congress. And that's why we have a brand new segment called What a Crock It. Yes, Jasmine Crockett, I want to feature every one of her pieces of audio. Here's her latest.
So I had to go around the country and educate people about what immigrants do for this country or the fact that we are a country of immigrants.
She's right, educating right. Other people.
The fact is, ain't none of y'all trying to go and farm right now.
Yes, the sass.
Okay, so I'm lying. Raise your hand.
Oh my God, this is so fake. I can't take it.
You're not. We done picking cotton. We are. You can't pay us enough to find a plantation.
That's right. We need slave labor from other countries to do all that difficult work. That's why we want to import illegal immigrants so that we don't have to do it. Assign them the cotton picking slavery jobs. What a wonderful statement, once again, of Democratic priorities. Please, Lord God, let her continue to speak. And no one talk to her about how she should shut up. Keep talking. Speak, speak, speak. Enlighten us, O Crockett. A father sits down to tell his son a bedtime story. But this isn't just any story. This is the story. It's the one that changes everything. As the boy listens, his imagination pulls him into the world of Jesus, walking beside him, seeing the miracles, feeling the weight of his sacrifice. It's powerful, it's emotional, and it brings the gospel to life in a way that's fresh and unforgettable. It's called The King of Kings. It's a stunning new animated film, retells the life of Jesus through the eyes of a child. It's not just beautifully done. It's packed with some serious talent. Mark Hamill's in this. He does all sorts of voice work. Kenneth Branagh, Uma Thurman, Ben Kingsley, Pierce Brosnan, Forest Whitaker, and so many more. You know, it's not just some boring, awful cat. I will say, there was a time where the faith-based movies were kind of like, great message, but we're not there anymore. Big part of that is Angel Studios. This is a movie your whole family can sit down and watch together this Easter. Mine's going to. We're going to go this weekend. And I think it's a great way to have the kids learn about this incredible, true story. Pre-order your tickets today at angel.com/stew. Angel.com/stew. It's angel.com/stew. You can pre-order today. Get tickets. The King of Kings comes out on Friday. Okay. So here's what happened. I will say, if you happen to have small children, you might want to turn the segment off for a moment. It's a bad idea to build pipe bombs, right? Not a good idea. Really bad idea if you don't know how to handle pipe bombs and they might blow up while you're making the pipe bomb. Okay. But if you do those two things, you should really think about getting involved in this whole situation if you also have certain tattoos. Maybe tattoos of a swastika on your body that people might discover when you're in the hospital. Especially if it might be on your penis. So if you have a swastika tattoo on your penis, don't endanger yourself, because if you go, a surgeon might just do this. He was fined for sharing a photo of the patient's swastika tattooed penis. It's not a sentence I thought I was going to say today, but, crazier things seem to be happening in the world than even that.